Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
We'll hear about the latest concerning Florida's prison agency, which is now facing a lawsuit because of the gruesome death of a mentally ill inmate and other prison abuse allegations.
And right now, with a lot of things that have been exposed in the media over the last several months, if I had a son or a daughter or a loved one in the institution, I would be concerned too.
Also this week, the national debate over the net neutrality issue has a Florida angle, and we'll look into that.
Simple example is when you're going to like a show and some of the seating is priority. That's what we're trying to avoid with net neutrality.
We'll also meet the new president of Florida State University and learn how the state is looking to extend its salute to veterans beyond their official recognition day that occurred this week. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The death of mentally ill inmate Darren Rainey and the way the Florida Department of Corrections handled the investigation has spurred that agency to enact a series of reforms to combat prison abuse at its correctional facilities. Now, as Sasha Cordner reports, the department is facing a suit from Rainey's family, which has revealed new details surrounding his death 2 years ago in a South Florida prison.
The 15-page brief outlines the events leading up to Darren Rainey's death. During a schizophrenic episode, it says Rainey smeared feces on his face. So it states, as a form of punishment by prison guards at Dade Correctional, Rainey received what's called the shower treatment. After he was locked in a scalding hot shower for 2 hours, two guards found him unresponsive, and about 40 minutes later, he was pronounced dead. The brief reveals that the temperature was close to 105 degrees. A medical note showed more than 90% of Rainey's body was burned and his skin came off when touched. Peter Sleesman is an attorney who represents the Florida Institutional Legal Services Project in Disability Rights Florida, which is representing the Rainey's family in the suit. In addition to the Florida Department of Corrections, it's filed against the former prison guards involved in the alleged abuse, as well as Corizon, the health care provider, in charge during the time of Rainey's death. And the investigation into his death is still ongoing.
We have spoken to numerous inmates who are both currently housed on the unit and are former residents of the inpatient unit down there. And it became apparent that Mr. Rainey's death and the treatment of Mr. Rainey was not just an isolated incident, but in fact reflected an ongoing pattern and reflected widespread abuse of the mentally ill inmates who are housed on that unit. So we have been watching the investigations, or probably more appropriately, the lack of investigations of the situation down there. And we became very concerned that the steps that have been taken by the department so far were inadequate.
The mental health advocacy group Sleesman represents also filed a similar suit in federal court months ago on behalf of mentally ill inmates currently housed in the same facility.
The lawsuit is against the Secretary of the Department of Corrections and against the private corporation that provides health care, including mental health care, down at that unit. And the lawsuit does not seek damages, but rather seeks to get the court to order remedies that will ensure these abuses don't happen again.
And Stephen Albers agrees. Take a look at his business card, and he's a jack of all trades as a carpenter, a handyman, and a builder. The 49-year-old was also once an inmate at Dade Correctional Institution, where he says he encountered abuse by prison guards.
At Dade's, a guard broke my hip for not standing in the rain, and later on, he punched somebody in the face. They caught it on camera that he lied. He got fired. Then they gave him his job back. There's no accountability. There's no rules being followed. There's no laws being followed. Them officers rule everything, and they do what they want.
At one point, he says he was also housed in the same inpatient health unit as Rainey, adding that guards treated inmates badly. While he was there, it was under the direction of Charles McCray, Dade's director of corrections at the time.
They degrade him, basically, and humiliate him. That whole camp, all the guards are basically Captain McCray was running it, and they called him Devo for short for the movie Friday because he was so mean. He'd keep people from eating just for talking in line. And these are mentally ill people. Some talk to themselves.
Albers also recalled a time when he says he became delusional because he was taking off his meds and he was then locked in a shower.
And then I started spitting water out, taking a shower because I was delusional. And then one guy walked by with his boots on, three of them said I spit on, which I didn't.
But he says what came after is what really troubles him.
They were supposed to have the camera running before they jumped on me with the CERT team. They didn't. And when I complained about it, nothing was done. I mean, it was all right. When I went to the Inspector General's, you know, they didn't want to do nothing about it, even though they violated the rule. When you use the force, you're supposed to video camcorder everything. And I was never even asked to comply to handcuffs before they jumped on me, which is by rule they're supposed to.
And it's alleged behavior like that Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Mike Cruz has continually said he won't tolerate at his agency.
In our agency, we're going to be open and we're going to be transparent. And when these allegations come forward, we're going to take them seriously and we're going to vet them through the process that we have currently in place through an investigation, whether that be through our Office of our Inspector General or our Inspector General along with the partnership we have now with FDLE. It's a difficult life being incarcerated. And right now, with a lot of things that have been exposed in the media over the last several months, if I had a son or a daughter or a loved one in an institution, I would be concerned too.
Cruz has said he hopes the investigation into Rainey's death will come to a close soon. He's also been working on implementing several reforms, the latest one hiring a mental health ombudsman. In addition, he recently met and talked with a group of protesters who either had imprisoned loved ones or were imprisoned themselves, which includes Albers. Both sides parted ways amicably, noting that there are good prison guards within the prison system. Meanwhile, since last month, close to 50 prison guards have been fired due to prison abuse allegations. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
This week, President Barack Obama proposed reclassifying the Internet as a public utility. Some Floridians are applauding the idea as a way to protect startup businesses and consumers. But the cable industry is fighting back, saying the level of regulation the president proposes would stifle investment and potentially limit service to those same consumers. Jessica Palumbo looked into what's behind the debate over net neutrality.
The ping pong table in the lobby confirms it. This is a startup incubator. The sleek-looking shared workspace is called Domi Station. It's just off the Florida State University campus.
So right now we're in the open lounge. It has a nice bar that usually has beer on tap for happy hour Fridays.
Ryan Kapinski comes here to run his startup, ShopX. It's an app that lets people make shopping lists by talking to their Google Glass eyepieces.
And as a startup founder, it really inspires me to really kind of disrupt the internet market, and that's not possible without net neutrality.
Net neutrality. Those words have been buzzing around the nation after a proposal by President Obama recently stoked a long-standing debate. The president wants the Federal Communications Commission to reclassify the internet as a public utility like phone service.
In plain English, I'm asking them to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life.
To keep internet content and traffic flowing freely, Obama wants the FCC to allow more regulation of service providers. Those are cable companies like Comcast and so-called internet backbone providers like Verizon. Kapinski says new entrepreneurs want those extra checks in place to ensure providers don't allow deeper-pocketed companies to pay to fast-track their web services to customers. In industry speak, it's called paid prioritization. Some have referred to it as creating internet fast lanes.
Because right now, since I have the same privileges on the internet, such as a Google or a Netflix, I can create a startup, and within a year or two, I can have the same volume of traffic and still be a competitor. I have a fair chance at fighting the big boys. Now, when you have everyone in a different league where I have to pay out my way, that is not really scalable, especially as an early startup. You cannot scale when you have to pay up so much just for access.
The FCC's own open internet proposal would require providers to disclose their policies and prohibit them from blocking content. But critics have said it doesn't go far enough because it still allows paid prioritization. Florida State University telecommunications policy professor Steve McDowell says the Obama proposal to redefine the internet as a telecom service is generally seen as a more customer-friendly option.
In a sense, it's a different set of rules, but it's meant to promote competition and promote service and promote access.
On the other side of the debate are free market advocacy groups, including Associated Industries of Florida, whose CEO, Tom Feeney, says net neutrality is not in the best interest of Florida's economy. But Time Warner Cable board member and former New Hampshire Senator John Sununu says service providers do support net neutrality, just not the way the president is proposing.
This isn't about supporting net neutrality or not supporting net neutrality. This is about whether we impose harsh, expensive, draconian regulations that were designed 80 years ago on the modern internet.
He dismisses Obama's proposal as a liberal attempt to expand government power, and he imagines this worst-case scenario.
They could set prices for everyone, and price controls are the surest way to destroy any incentive to invest in new infrastructure, because you're going to limit the ability of any company, big or small, to get a return on their investment. That would be terrible for consumers, because less investment means less innovation and fewer products and services.
Sununu says net neutrality can be achieved without the public utility approach, and restrictions on paid prioritization are possible using a different legal remedy available to the FCC. The final FCC rule is expected soon, and if Obama's proposal is adopted, industry experts say to expect service providers to challenge it. So it could be years before Americans get an answer to the question, how neutral should the net be? For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
In line with the upcoming end-of-the-year holidays, Governor Rick Scott signed an executive order this week that cuts the cost of lifetime hunting and fishing licenses for Floridians between the ages of 5 and 21. Scott's order authorized the state's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission to discount the lifetime sportsman's licenses when purchased for young adults and children between November 24th and December 31st. The licenses, which cover saltwater and freshwater recreational fishing, hunting, and most associated permits, now cost up to $1,000, but during the discount period, the fee will be reduced to $500. The license does not expire if the individual moves out of state. Still to come on Capitol Report, the open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act health insurance will be underway this weekend. Already, there are a few problems to report.
And I will have to go this year again to the healthcare.gov and get new insurance.
John Thrasher assumed the helm of Florida State University this week. As he says, the learning curve has been steep.
In this job, you have an enormous amount of responsibility and a lot of entities that are out there that you really don't have a lot of direct control over.
Veterans Day itself may be over, but Florida officials are celebrating the state's veterans for the rest of the month.
If you think about it, Florida is home to more than 1.5 million veterans, and so it's an important resource for our state and a large population.
Open enrollment for health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, begins tomorrow and runs through February 15th. Lottie Watts from member station WUSF in Tampa reports on one St. Petersburg man who signed up last year and has learned he'll have to pick a new plan this year from the federal government health insurance marketplace at healthcare.gov.
Last year was the first year you could buy health insurance on the federal health insurance marketplace. Phil Ammon of St. Petersburg was one of nearly a million Floridians who bought a plan on healthcare.gov.
When it was first made available, I went through the week of terror with the website going down.
He says the plan he bought from Coventry One, one of the most inexpensive plans for sale on the exchange, wasn't ideal, but it took care of some necessary medical expenses.
I had a colonoscopy this year, as somebody my age doctor says, you got to have it done. So he was very glad to hear I had the insurance, and I promptly went and had the procedure done. And fortunately, everything came out perfect.
He's been a freelance writer for more than a decade, and he says he put off the test because it would have cost him $1,500 out of pocket. Like 91% of Floridians who bought a plan on healthcare.gov, he was eligible for federal tax credits that helped pay for part of his monthly premiums. And there's another piece of the Affordable Care Act that puts health insurance in reach. He can't be denied coverage based on pre-existing conditions.
That single change alone, I think, is the most important to me personally. And again, it doesn't have to be necessarily a function of age. You know, somebody who's in their 40s, 50s, or what have you. Personally, I've dealt with high blood pressure since my early 30s.
And up until last year, he says health insurance companies could either flat out deny him or ask him to pay really expensive premiums.
Now I have, I had insurance for a year, and I got a letter from my insurance company saying that they're no longer going to be carrying my policy, one of the bronze level policies, and I will have to go this year again to the healthcare.gov and get new insurance.
And he won't be the only one, says Sabrina Corlett, the project director at Georgetown University's Center on Health Insurance Reforms.
For people who are enrolled, most of them, in fact, probably all of them, are going to need to go back to the marketplace or healthcare.gov to check their information, make sure that it's up to date, and they're going to need to re-enroll in a health plan.
The companies selling plans in Ammon's home county of Pinellas are Assurant, Cigna, Florida Blue, Humana, and United Healthcare. Coventry One, the company he went with last year, is nowhere on the list.
I guess it's going to go back to square one, and on November 15th, get on the exchange and start over again.
Under the Affordable Care Act, most Americans have to have health insurance or they'll face a penalty. In 2015, the penalty increases to 2% of your household income, or $325, whichever is greater. For Ammon and others who are shopping on healthcare.gov and need their coverage to start January 1st, they have to enroll by December 15th. For Health News Florida, I'm Lottie Watts in Tampa.
Former State Senator John Thrasher's first day as the president of Florida State University was this week. The new president says the job of running a big institution of higher learning is far different from running the legislature. And as Lynn Hatter tells us, all of Thrasher's actions are being closely watched as he settles into the new job.
As John Thrasher's new role as FSU president was confirmed, a group of about 50 students continued their protests against him. An FSU representative told the students Thrasher would meet with them, and Monday, when he walked in for his first official day as president, he did. The students came with a list of demands to the former state senator. Thrasher told the students he'd need time to review the list. The hour-long exchange left graduate student Ralph Wilson less than impressed.
We have to harness the power that students have. Thanks to people like John Thrasher and politicians, it's a decreasing amount of power that students students have.
These students have protested the presidential search process, FSU's contracts with the Koch Foundation, and have blasted the way the university has responded to a federal investigation into sexual assault allegations against the school's star quarterback. But there are more than 40,000 other students at Florida State, and even more faculty and staff. And Thrasher has been reaching out to them as well. He's been reintroducing himself to FSU and trying to put the recent past behind him. That includes the presidential search process, which has widely been acknowledged as flawed by many, including a person Thrasher calls a friend, Board of Governors member Dean Colson.
I think Senator Thrasher is going to be a really good president. My biggest regret is we did not arrive at this moment in time following a search process that all constituencies feel good about. I think Senator Thrasher could have emerged as the best qualified candidate from such a process. If that had happened, both the university and its new president would have been better served.
Colson's remarks came during Thrasher's confirmation hearing before the Board of Governors, and Thrasher says Colson does make a good point.
I hope we can now move on. I hope we can move away from that and measure me basically as president by the work I do and my performance and how we do. And I'm perfectly willing to have that measurement made.
Thrasher, a former House Speaker and powerful legislative leader, says the transition to university president has included a steep learning curve.
In this job, you have an enormous amount of responsibility and a lot of entities that are out there that you really don't have a lot of direct control over. But the president then has to assimilate all that together and try to come up with the best possible decisions and visions for the university. So it's a lot different in that respect, I think, and sometimes challenging. But on the other hand, they're talented people who have this university's best interest at heart.
Thrasher's zeal for FSU is well known. FSU's medical school is named after him, but he's got a lot of work to do. He's got to finish off the school's billion-dollar donor campaign started under former President Eric Barron. The university is $600 million the way there. He's also got to help increase FSU's national ranking, which slid this year, and most importantly, help the school recover from what's been a rough year in the public eye. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, this week, we have a couple of stories that relate to this week's observance of Veterans Day. The Everglades National Park kicked off tours of the Nike missile site on Veterans Day. Dina Weinstein reports the hidden site preserves relics from the Cold War and the voices of veterans who staffed it.
In 1962, an American U-2 reconnaissance spy plane photographed Soviet missile sites in Cuba. President Kennedy ramped up defenses in South Florida, and the Nike missile base was active all through the 60s and the 70s. The 22-building site is located 11 miles from the Everglades National Park entrance. Ted Swanson served at the base as a radar maintenance chief from 1966 to 1968.
Quite often, Castro would send his MiGs up there. They'd light up on our scope, and we'd pick them up and track them.
Today, missiles in original metal warehouses poke out of burns in the middle of the Everglades. Leon Howell is a tour guide and veteran.
We almost didn't get to wake up the next morning. That's what's significant about it. We've never been that close, but we were never that close before, nor since, to nuclear war.
And Florida was on the front lines. I'm Dina Weinstein in Miami.
While Veterans Day may be over, Regan McCarthy reports organizations around the state are hoping to use the entire month to show veterans their gratitude.
Throughout the month of November, those visiting the Florida History Museum will have the chance to send handwritten thank you notes to the state's veterans. Carrie Post, Deputy Secretary of Cultural Affairs and Historical Resources, says just outside the World War II exhibit, visitors will pass a small table covered with note cards.
Here is where we want to invite the community to fill out a personal thank you note to thank the brave men and women who have served our country, to take a moment. There's pens, there's a beautiful note card with the flag and says thank you.
So far, Post says it's been a pretty popular activity.
It has been gangbusters, and I say that, I'm not kidding you, when I was down here in the museum probably about 45 minutes ago, the table was surrounded with both school children and adults. Everybody was writing notes.
Post jokes she's already planning to put in an order for more note cards. At the end of the month, the notes will be delivered to veterans through the local Honor Flight program. Karen Moore, whose business helps support the Honor Flight program, says honoring veterans is an important tradition in the community.
We are very fortunate in this community to have many veterans living here among us, and it's our responsibility as a community to say thank you to them in many ways, not only through a letter-writing campaign, but to see to it that they have opportunities in education, that they've got the quality of life that they deserve.
And Department of Economic Opportunity Director Jesse Panuccio says that's just what his department is working to do. He says November is Hire a Veteran Month.
One, it's important that we as a state and a society serve those who served us, but veterans also typically are able to fill the needs that employers are looking for. We often hear that employers are looking for higher skill workers who have the soft skills and the technical skills to do a good job, and former military members often fit that profile exactly.
Panuccio says more than 1.5 million veterans live in Florida, and state officials are working to attract more. In order to do that, Panuccio says DEO is working with businesses to encourage them to hire veterans and helping military members address any possible stumbling blocks.
For the average veteran, it may just be something as simple as making sure that you can translate on a resume many of the skills you gained in the military into terms that civilian employers will understand.
Panuccio says CareerSource employees are trained to help veterans with that very issue. He says officials are also trained to help veterans who may be disabled to find positions that will fit their needs. And he points to the recent Florida GI Bill, which gives veterans in-state tuition and waives fees for those seeking licensed positions in Florida. As one more way to show their gratitude, state officials are creating a veterans walk in the Capitol courtyard. Governor Rick Scott laid the first brick just after Veterans Day. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Nick Evans, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.